Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, Israeli forces have intercepted boats carrying aid into Gaza and detained over 200 activists, including a number of Irish citizens, and it has emerged this morning, Nelson Mandela's grandson. Israel's foreign ministry said the vessels had been safely stopped and that those aboard were being transferred to an Israeli port. The Global Summit Florida of small flotilla of small vessels had attracted huge international attention over the last number of days, with many tracking their progress across the Mediterranean. Well, for more on this, let's speak to Sukundar Kamani, who's foreign affairs correspondent with Channel 4 News. And Sukundar, this is an evolving situation this morning. What more can you tell us about the boats that have been intercepted so far and what's been happening?
Well, according to the tracker on the Global Summit Flotilla website, it seems that all but one of the boats have now been intercepted, the boats that were sailing, attempting to sail towards Gaza. That one boat, it's not clear what's happened to that yet. I think we could, in all likelihood, it probably will be intercepted too. We saw some footage released by Israeli officials overnight of some of those on board the flotilla, Greta Thunberg, the activist, and others. The Israelis saying that they were being taken to Israel, where they will be processed for deportation. We've also heard statements of condemnation from many countries around the world, including Turkey, South Africa, Colombia, many of whom have citizens on board that flotilla. Israeli officials had repeatedly decried it as a flotilla linked to Hamas, despite the fact that those on board included some high-profile political figures, Nelson Mandela's grandson, as you say, and Greta Thunberg, who I mentioned earlier.
Now, people who were on board the intercepted vessel said one was deliberately rammed at sea. Some were hit by water cannon, according to those reports as well. This is despite the Israeli Foreign Ministry's contention that the vessels had been safely stopped, in their words. Do we have any more information on that?
Well, we know that up until the approach towards Gaza's, what Gaza and Israeli waters, Italian and Spanish naval ships had been escorting some of those boats because there had been repeated attacks believed to have been carried out by Israel, targeting them on international waters off the coast of Tunisia, for example, earlier on. Those Spanish and Italian naval ships had then turned back and then said that they would not be further accompanying the flotilla ships as they approached Israel and Gaza. In terms of exactly what has happened, it's because of a lot of the communication networks from those ships were cut off as Israeli vessels approached them. It's been difficult to ascertain exactly what has happened. The images that the Israeli officials, no surprise, have released show that the those on board were safe. Some of the images show them even smiling. But I'm sure as they are processed for deportation and then released, we'll get more details as to exactly how the intercepts were carried out. Certainly no reports that we've had so far of people being injured.
Mm-hmm. And that information that they were transferred to an Israeli port, we don't have any detail on that either, do we, Sukundar, at this stage?
Well, the Israelis have said that they're taking them to Ashdod, which is a kind of a port just north of the northern part of the Gaza Strip. I mean, Israel has dealt with similar flotillas in the past, and that's often what's happened to people. And sometimes those on board have been detained for a number of days before they're processed for deportation. But it's also in Israel right now, the Jewish holiday of Yom Kippur, so information is somewhat slower to emerge than is usual.
And you mentioned the international reaction. Of course, this has been the subject of huge international attention since the flotilla set sail, but our own Taoiseach Micheál Martin has described the interception by Israel as a breach of international maritime law. Is that message emerging from other countries as well?
Certainly. I mean, a number of countries, particularly those who have adopted a more critical stance of Israel and who have nationals who are on board have been expressing some statements condemning what Israel has been doing. South Africa has called it a grave offence. Turkey referred to it as an act of terrorism. You know, the commentary from other European countries has been somewhat more cautious, but also expressions of concern from the UK, for example. Australia also has nationals and has said that it's, you know, ready to provide consular assistance to those who were on board. I mean, the Israeli position has been that this is a provocation. The activists on board have said that they were attempting to break the blockade and to deliver much needed humanitarian aid. But I mean, of course, really principally, I think the aim was to draw attention to the plight, the desperate plight of people in Gaza, both in terms of humanitarian needs, where a famine is being declared in large parts of Gaza, and where people, dozens of people, continue to be killed on a daily basis by Israeli forces, even as there's the possibility of a kind of some kind of ceasefire following those talks between Arab and Muslim states and Israel and the United States as well, and the world is awaiting Hamas's response to that ceasefire proposal.
Sukundra, thank you very much for joining us. Sukundra Kamani there from Channel 4. Well, for more on the reality of the humanitarian conditions on the ground in Gaza, Sukundra was describing, and the scarcity of aid reaching people, I'm joined on the line by James Elder, who's UNICEF's Gaza spokesperson, who is in Gaza at the moment. James, good morning.
Hi there, good morning.
Tell us where you are and what's happening.
In Gaza City, we've just come up from the south. There's a level of panic and confusion amongst people. They just don't know where to go. This is not people who have a choice to move south. They don't have the means. They're with elderly, they're with newborns, they have no money for transport, they have no tent. So they're desperately seeking, you know, somewhere that may be safe, knowing full well that, I mean, there's airstrikes as we were standing around a water point. They know nothing is safe here, and they've heard far too many reports, Claire, of so-called safe zones, of airstrikes on tents. And you can only imagine what shrapnel does to a tent. So there's confusion and there's fear in Gaza City right now.
And aid organisations, the ones who have been able to operate in whatever limited capacity, are now deciding that it's not safe, aren't they, in Gaza City, and are having to leave themselves?
Yeah, well, it's not. That's the thing. You see hospital time and time again attacked. You see areas where civilians are, areas where aid workers are, and those frontline workers, it's the last thing that they want to do. I'm here with UNICEF colleagues. We're going to do a nutrition drive around for severely malnourished children, get to a hospital where there are children in incubators. We've tried again to move children in incubators and to get incubators down to the south. That mission has been denied several times. So we keep pushing, Claire, to do that, because, I mean, I was in the hospital in the south yesterday, and I am seeing three premature babies on a bed sharing one oxygen source I've never seen before in hospitals that were once upon a time world class. Yesterday I was seeing 15 plus babies in a corridor. You're talking about a baby that was in ICU for 3 weeks and is now lying on a corridor floor. So the difference for them is of incubators and ventilators is absolutely game changing. But yeah, for the population here, they don't want to see aid workers go. They don't know where to go. I think it's really important everyone is reminded that so many civilians can't lose and leave, rather. And, of course, international humanitarian law, Claire, is very, very clear. Those civilians who can't or choose not to evacuate, they cannot be considered as having forfeited civilian status. So their continued presence does not, despite statements, does not transform them into combatants. And again, I'm talking about thousands of children here.
Mm-hmm. Now, overnight, we've heard and reports this morning about the Israeli Navy intercepting those boats carrying aid into Gaza. 200 activists have been detained. How concerned are you about the lack of aid getting in where you are?
Oh, hugely so. I think for the north right now, we're concerned it's going to be completely cut off again. We've seen that before. So again, we can time and again, we don't need people's suppositions. We just need the neutrality and evidence, Claire. And we've seen the north cut off for long periods of time. That's why there's a famine here. So now you've got a famine situation and people either moving to the south where there is still inadequate levels of care because of denials of materials coming in. We're not in the business now of counting trucks. We must move past that. But either way, we're not certainly not talking about 500 trucks a day. That was in the good times. That was before, Claire, the horrors of October 7. We need a 1,000 or more now. It's a fraction. It's a fraction of that. So it's not just incubators and ventilators and nutritional food. It's obviously tents. It's obviously hygiene kits. It's the things, Claire, that you and I have spoken about for a long, long time with the same problem, a deliberate denial of these things for a population who's utterly shattered.
Can people still get out of Gaza City? Are they still making that journey?
Yeah, we pass a lot, not the majority by any stretch, but we pass hundreds who are, and they're confused because a checkpoint has now been set up. They want to know, is it safe to go past that checkpoint at the moment? So obviously there's been so many examples of people being shot on foot, being shot by a quadcopter. I was in a hospital barely a week ago and was in four children, all who'd been shot by quadcopters. So again, people, you know, understand very clearly what they're up against here. So people are moving south, they have that ability to move south if they walk. So, you know, the things I see, I'm seeing, you know, family and, you know, small children, and everyone's only carrying a bag now. This is 15 to 20 mile walk. They're only carrying a bag at the moment. It seems that that's all they've got. Every now and then you'll see two children trying to carry a mattress. So beyond the fact that people should not be forcibly displaced, remembering that's what this is, Claire, it is forcible displacement. There's nothing neutral about displacement. It's violent. It's repetitious here. But beyond that fact, this would be made easier, of course, if they knew they were going to a setup down south that was actually safe. And by safe, I don't just mean not bombed. I mean if those with the responsibility, the Israeli officials, had actually set up. So there was camps and medicines and water and food. You know, 85% of people in Almawasi, where there must be more than a million now, 85% live within 10 metres of open sewerage. This is not how people have lived here when in their homes and apartments and their holiday homes. Two-thirds of people don't have access to soap.
Just when you said there that you met four children who had been shot by quadcopter, do you have any more detail on what happened in that case?
Oh, I scribbled through my notes. A whole range of those four children. One of the boys was going to get wood, firewood, and was shot. One of the girls was returning with water. She's 9 years old. So all just general day-to-day activity. One of them, there'd been an airstrike and the child was fleeing from their home. These aren't isolated incidents. And again, this is me for a very short time in a hospital. It was just simply the first room I walked into. In Gaza, unfortunately, you don't have to seek out, atrocities. They are in front of you 360 degrees. That was a tent in the car park at Al-Aqsa Hospital, and that was those four children inside Al-Aqsa Hospital. It was corridor and corridor full, Claire, of people with the wounds of war, including children. I saw a boy on the floor literally bleeding out until he was put on a stretcher. Once he was put on a stretcher, that position in the corridor was taken by another wounded person. 5 metres away from them was a little five-year-old girl who'd just been pulled out of the rubble with that fearful look of across her face and all the ash and smoke, and she was okay, no broken bones, but her mother and her sister both died in that airstrike.
It's just horrendous, and as you have said, we've spoken so many times now about this that it's beginning to feel endless almost. And we know that there are peace efforts underway. And going back to that flotilla that I mentioned earlier, is that helpful from your point of view that people would take that action? I mean, even from the perspective that it keeps this in the headlines, or do you really wish that those items on those boats managed to get into Gaza?
Oh, look, as ever, just to be a conduit for Palestinians here. And it was a few hours ago when I was getting ready for this mission to the north that Palestinian colleagues were showing me videos of that, saying they were up till, you know, 1-2 o'clock in the morning, and there was a level of joy as they showed me the outpouring of people from Italy to Spain, and what was happening on those flotillas and how they were continuing to go. So I think there is a great sense among people that increased solidarity for them. So that only has a special place in Palestinians' hearts to know that at least the man on the street, if you will, is clear on what's happening to them here, and clearly, you know, has a big heart on that. Yes, of course, that aid needs to be here, and yes, of course, you know, one convoy of trucks would be the same quantity, and there's 1,000 trucks on the wrong side of the border. But nonetheless, the sense is giving people that they are not forgotten, at least by everyday people. Certainly, they're forgotten by leadership, those with decision-making power. But I think it matters a great deal to Palestinians here.
Mm-hmm. So when you're making your assessments today in Gaza City, you're obviously going to see what the need is, but not able to get what you need in.
Yeah, we know the need. We were here 2 days ago and we've had colleagues here the whole time. So this will be about taking a huge amount of therapeutic food, of food for the most malnourished children, to two hospitals this morning. They're pediatric hospitals in neonatal intensive care. They'll be working out how we can move incubators from one to the other. So no, this is very much, yes, it's about talking to those health staff and seeing how can we help health staff still get to work every single day amid these attacks. But it's very much a supply driven mission.
Mm-hmm. But you have access to that therapy. Food, do you?
Yeah, not the quantities we need, but, you know, boxes and rooms and rooms that we're loading into vehicles, yes.
And that will be distributed today?
Yes, exactly. That'll go to the hospitals. We'll try and get down to one of the clinics as well, which is just a tent that we've got down on the next to the beach as well, where I was 2 days ago, and we did a large distribution there. They also need medicines. So you need medicines for everything. The number of children I'm seeing now with rashes that have, you know, they're starting to bleed and so on, all basic creams and ointments and antibiotics that people are desperately struggling for. But no, this is very much a mission to speak to those health staff and to understand how they can keep getting to work, because you need trained health staff in intensive care neonatal spaces. But at the same time, yeah, getting them this you know, magic food for malnourished babies.
And James, it's extraordinary that those staff are still there, still plugging away despite those abominable conditions that you describe.
Oh, Claire, it so is. I mean, you're talking about a nurse or a surgeon or the head of a hospital who I have not met one in the last 3 months, 4 months, who doesn't start their day in a tent. So their home's been destroyed, their livelihood gone. Many, many of them now are not being paid. UNICEF helps with kind of fiscal incentives and so on. So they're in a tent, they're not being paid. They start their day at 5 o'clock in the morning, quite possibly having heard a bombardment. They start it by, you know, with their family, working out how do we get water for the family, how do we get wood, and then they go to work. And going to work, you know, is often going through the line of fire. It's an extraordinary resolve, an extraordinary commitment. It's that sort of sense that is really still holding Gaza together, which is community bonds, an incredibly high literacy rate, and people, you know, still sticking together. But those things, let's be really clear, the education rate, the health system, even that sense of community, they are under direct attack.
James, well, thank you always for joining us. James Elder there, UNICEF's Gaza spokesperson, speaking to us from Gaza City. And it's so rare to get to speak to somebody who is inside Gaza, and it has been since all of this began. Coming up later on, how PAYE workers could have gotten more in this month's budget. But next, expert advice on how to stay healthy as you age.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.